Ladies and gentlemen, the Three Knockdown Rule brought to you by Hustler Casino is back. I'm your co-host Steve Kim, joined by Windy City Mario Lopez. You've blown back into town. Welcome back.
More on that later. Salud. Mm.
When you toast, you take a drink, Kim. Take a drink. That's how it works.
But anyway, I'd like to thank everyone that makes the show possible. Smoke and Tim Frazier and Tino on the edits. And I will take a drink right now. All right, the bout sheet for today's show. Haney Garcia fight preview. We have a lot of fight review to go over the last couple of weeks. News and notes and Ask Mario and Final Flurries. But we want to let you know, this podcast is sponsored by Hustler Casino, located just 15 minutes from downtown L.A. During the last Monday of the month, if you play No Limit Hold'em, you can win a chance to play on the award-winning live streaming show, Hustler Casino Live. The lucky player will be staked $5,000 to play on the live stream. The winning player must stay through the duration of the whole stream. So stop by and play all your favorite games at Hustler Casino or check them out online at HustlerCasino.com. All right, let's kick things off here. Round number one. We're going to look ahead before we look back from the Barclays Center, presented by Golden Boy Promotions on The Zone pay-per-view. It is now time for the WBC Junior Welterweight title of the world. Devin Haney takes on Ryan Garcia. And Mario, before I hand it over to you, I've canvassed the opinion of leading trainers, sharp boxing minds, guys that bet, matchmakers, and people in the sport. Not one person is picking Ryan Garcia.
About when was this fight announced?
2 months ago.
2 months ago. When this fight was announced, about 2 weeks after, I honestly thought there was maybe a 20% chance that it would actually go off because of all the shenanigans and it's crazy. Nobody thought it was we were going to get to this point and be a week out. Am I right?
You are.
Nobody thought we were going to be a week out. Everyone thought this kid is wilding out on social media and has all these crazy antics. And when I hosted the press conference, people were making a lot about him with the sweating and then with the horse and then the Cirque du Soleil thing that came in. He's going to use all these shenanigans and all this outlandish behavior to say, hey, I wasn't in the right state of mind. I need to pull back for my mental health and just to take care of myself, put myself first. I can't go forward with this fight. I would say 80% of the people thought that was going to happen. Well, we are a week out. No, pardon me.
We are five days
away. I think this is going to go off, Kim.
Mm.
What do you put the odds at now? We went from 80%. Now 5 days away, what do you put the odds at?
Mario, I said during our last live show that we did, the fight would happen. And I'll tell you why.
You get paid.
This is Ryan Garcia's profession. This is what he does for a living. It's still a lot of money on the line.
I agree. However, it seems like the behavior on social media has gone yet to another level, which I didn't even think was possible. My guy is Kanye and Britney Spears wrapped into one with a little Antonio Brown. It's just so with the Christian scripture and then the OnlyFans models and he's tagging Tom Brady and then Tom Holland and one Zendaya. I'm like, it's not a good look if you are, quote, promoting a fight. I'm sorry, but I think you run the risk of turning a lot of people off. I've never seen, and we've seen a lot of different ways that people promote fights. I've never seen one promoted in this manner. And I haven't had a chance because I've been busy the last few weeks to catch up with Oscar and get his take. I think everyone at Golden Boy is just happy that we're 5 days away and they're going to make it to the finish line. I just think this needs to be said before we get into the fight because I'm just surprised that we're here. Still, which I'm happy about, but I'm surprised. Now, is he smart enough to have this all sort of a charade? And in the background, he's really putting in the work and we're going to see a sharp, precise Ryan Garcia? I don't know. We'll see come in 5 days. I do look forward to the fight going off. There's still a chance that maybe it may not.
Yeah, as well, we just want people to know we are taping this on a Monday.
We're taping
afternoon.
This on a Monday. Exactly. Yeah. There's still a chance because as I talked to you, as I was coming up here, there was like 10 posts, some of which may be deleted by the time, but they were wild, bro. They were wild. And I'm like, how's this kid have any time to train when he's just. Anyway, let's assume it does go off. We're 5 days away. Prayers up. It happens. I too lean with a lot of the experts and boxing aficionados out there that I think Haney, now with this new weight class, he's been busy. He's fought higher opposition. He's continued to grow and develop as a fighter. He seems more prepared, not as distracted, has a strong foundation behind him. And I think he's going to be hungry. I think he's going to be angry. And I know sometimes that can play against you and be a detriment, but I don't think so with him. Every time we've seen him since he's moved up, especially in this weight class, he's looked sharp and he's looked good. And he's gone up against some tough guys with Progre. And I know they have a history. And sometimes a guy does have your number. So Ryan might be a little comfortable and Haney might be a little, not necessarily reluctant, but cautious in the first few rounds. But I think once he figures out his timing and gets that distance, I think he's going to let those hands go. And I think it's going to be very entertaining.
Okay, so you're on the record, but I want to know, is it a slight lean or a Fat Joe lean all the way back? Because I actually think this is going to be a one-sided fight.
So do I. Like I said, is someone that... I'm just blown away by his antics outside of the ring, because that has to be a distraction from his preparation, right? Or, and I don't like to play conspiracy theorists, or is it a built-in alibi? I wasn't in the right frame of mind.
Right. See, there
I was
you go.
In the right frame of mind. I had a lot going
nobody
on.
Nobody cared for me.
They just wanted
the money.
Somebody should have looked out for me. Yeah. I should have been, right? Yes. You know what I'm saying?
Agreed.
So, because you don't, that is not as, I'm sorry, but that's not a sane approach. Even by...
Right, because if he goes all over McCall, we're all going to say, yeah, see, we should have seen it coming, but wait a minute. He's the one who insisted.
Right.
You're not going to psychologically evaluate me. He told that to the New York Commission.
I'm really curious. I think we know how the fight is going to play out. I'm curious how the interview is going to be afterwards and what is said afterwards. Just what we just discussed. So I'm fascinated by this whole circus.
Just looking at this from a pure prize-fighting standpoint, I was so impressed by Devin Haney in his debut at 140. Those struggles at 135 where he had to put himself through torture, where he left at least half of his legs and his ass in a sauna or in a hot steam bath, are gone. He looked so stable and strong, controlling the center of the ring. He looked like he was in absolute command. And I got the sense that the fight to make 135 was probably tougher than the actual fight, as we saw against a brilliant Lomachenko. Give him credit. With that said, if you look at pure fighting, technique, and tactics, outside of the check left hook and the power of Garcia, which is very reflexive, wouldn't you say every other check mark goes to Devin Haney?
Yes, look, they both, as I mentioned, had fought each other
six times. 3-3.
Correct. So they know each other. The real question is, who has developed more and who has benefited as in the pro style? And it seems that Haney has made greater strides. And it seems that he, because of his father leading the ship and having a stable, strong foundation, has been able to really grow and remain focused. I think Ryan, because he was the first example of a star before necessarily accomplishing
a social media star.
Correct. But a star nonetheless. Yeah. With the attention and the money, a social media star before becoming a boxing star. We've never seen that before. It's not like he couldn't fight. It's just we haven't seen it where the fighter is not at that level. The fame was surpassed, or didn't necessarily surpassed, was just far exceeded.
By the actual achievements.
Exactly. So, look, maybe Ryan knows something we don't in those six times. That's a lot of times to face someone six times.
But they're kids. They're adults now.
They were teenagers.
In theory.
Correct. They were teenagers. They're young adults now. So it wasn't that long ago. And when you are who you are at the end of the day, yes, you can improve. Yes, you can get better. So maybe he says something, I don't know. Maybe he feels so confident. I don't know. But I just feel that Haney is really in a groove right now, and this is a really bad time to face him.
You know, if Ryan Garcia cannot slip the jab, and that's been an issue, and Devin Haney, in and out movement, technical precision, boxing IQ, people can talk all they want about, well, if he lands that left hook. Yeah, but you know what? When you say puncher's chance, what does Freddie Roach really say what the puncher chance mean?
Getting lucky.
Getting lucky. Got to land the lottery punch. The other thing is with Ryan Garcia, what I find interesting is that he doesn't know what he is as a fighter. He really doesn't. Sometimes he thinks he's slick. Sometimes he gives a shoulder roll. Sometimes he says, I'm going to be a fighter. When you go back last year and you were at this fight, I thought it was very apparent the level of poise that Tank Davis had and control of his movements, where he saw everything in slow motion, where Ryan Garcia, everything was quick and hurried. And again, I know we had some physical problems coming in.
It looked frantic.
He looked frantic. And everything was about trying to get lucky and rushing into it. Meanwhile, Tank Davis is just slowly setting stuff up, picking him apart. Now, Devin Haney does not have those heavy type of hands to turn it around or ice him in one punch. But I can see a scenario, and maybe I'll go on the record. Devin Haney boxes him early and then eventually beats him into submission. In fact, you know what? I'm going to go on the record right now.
Makes him quit.
I will say KO9, Devin Haney. Hmm. Bam, out there. Bold. And
KO or he makes him quit?
It could be the same thing. I think quitting would be worse than a KO.
Well, that's why I'm asking.
Right. I'll say KO. But okay. Let's say my scenario happens. Kim Stradamus nails it. Is the credibility of Ryan Garcia now absolutely nil based on what has happened in his two real fights where he's not really competitive?
Yes, especially because of the way he's carried himself outside of the ring. Then I don't think he can be taken serious. And mind you, how he carries himself afterwards, and if he starts coming up with those excuses like we just mentioned, for example, then it's a whole nother level because people are going to be like, oh, man.
No, I believe the way he has handled himself, and look, he's an incredibly polarizing young man, which is good and bad because it actually makes you popular / infamous, which can get you paid in today's era. But there are people now that no matter what he says, they will not allow him to be the boy who cried wolf. It's not going to happen. That if he gets embarrassed and he has no competitive moments, they're going to say basically he has been absolutely uncovered as a fraud. I believe more than the WBC titles on the line. You know what's really on the line? The credibility of Ryan Garcia as a world-class fighter.
No, absolutely. If he does not perform well or at least makes it competitive, then this could be the last we see of him fighting fighters of this caliber. Then he's got to be willing to put in the work to see if he can build himself back up.
Right. So this is taking place this Saturday at the Barclays Center on the Zone pay-per-view and outlets like pay-per-view.com. Great service, by the way. I was really impressed.
We're going to have Jim Lampley host again, huh?
We will. Again. He's a stalwart. Also, on this card, the undercard, junior welterweight, Arnold Barboza takes on Sean Puffy McComb. No Diddy. And also, Charles Conwell makes his Golden Boy debut against Nathaniel Gallimore. And rounding out the card, Beck the Bully and also Scrappy Ramirez. Mario, to wrap this segment up here.
Nice.
Ticket sales at the Barclays Center. Now, I get it. One guy is from the Bay Area. The other guy is from Victorville, California. This fight, in a perfect world, should have been in Las Vegas, absolutely, most likely. But once the PBC and Canelo had the hold on May 4th, they were locked out. Here's the issue when people say, well, Ryan did a great job of being provocative and promoting the event. Mario, it is one thing to punch that button on your cable box and say, I'm going to spend $80 or whatever for a pay-per-view. But when it comes to ticket sales and you have to travel to a city, you are now talking about the flight, the hotel, and then a ticket.
In this day and age,
yeah,
when both fighters are West Coast fighters, that's incredibly pricey. And it's not like this is a fight that has been brewing and you've been yearning for a la Pacquiao Mayweather. So it is unfortunate. I wish they would have actually done it in L.A.
Right, but I don't think the buildings were available. The other thing is, look, they overpriced the tickets.
Crypto? Oh, yeah, because the
they have overpriced the tickets and they flexed them down. And nowadays, with like these websites, you can chart not only what tickets are sold, but the pricing of them. And so
we gotta expect a big walk up.
Yes, and people tell me Brooklyn is a walk up city, but I think also that if you're a guy, let's say you're within a 2-hour drive, until I see both fighters weigh in, I'm not making the investment to say, okay, tomorrow we're gonna go down to the Barclays Center to actually pay a ticket to watch this. I hope it happens. There's a lot of hoopla over this, but again, I will take the professionalism and the technical precision of Devin Haney, not to just win, I think he will dominate Ryan Garcia. Mm-hmm. I could be right. I could be wrong. I'll be here to take the heat one way or the other next week. All right, we come back on the three knockdown rule with Mario Lopez and Steve Kim. We got a lot to talk about from the last couple of weeks after these messages.
This podcast is sponsored by Hustler Casino, located just 15 minutes from downtown L.A. during the last Monday of the month. If you play No Limit Hold'em, you can win a chance to play on the award-winning live streaming show Hustler Casino Live. The lucky player will be staked $5,000 to play on the live stream. The winning player must stay through the duration of the whole stream. Stop by and play all your favorite games at Hustler Casino or check them out online at HustlerCasino.com.
And we're back on the three knockdown rule with Mario Lopez and Steve Kim. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to get involved with the three knockdown rule and sponsor our program, we still have some slots available. Please reach out to us by emailing info@boxbid.io. Once again, that's info@boxbid.io. Boxbid.io is an online platform that is launching soon that helps public figures and professionals in the world of boxing get sponsorships. We are proudly working with Boxbid.io. All right, time for the fight review. We've got a lot to talk about here. Friday, March 29th, I was out there at the Desert Diamond Arena in Glendale, Arizona. And your new WBO interim, soon to be full-time 130-pound champion, Oscar Valdez with a stoppage over Liam Wilson. And now the undisputed female minimum weight championship, super bad Sanicia Estrada outboxes Yocasta Valle. All three scores had it 97-93. Mario, is Valdez the modern-day Mexican version of Arturo Gatti? Win, lose, or draw, he always gives you a good show.
I've always thought that for a long time. Not only that, he's an articulate guy. And I think just a smart guy. I think he has a future if he wants to later on in some broadcasting. And he really is. That was a really good analogy, sort of the Mexican Arturo Gatti. It was nice to see him sort of bounce back on this level and perform the way he did. Look, when he faced a Shakur Stevenson, that was like the guy at the peak of all his powers and stuff. Yeah. And he gave a valiant effort, but was just outgunned that night. But he was managed to bounce back, and he's been looking good. So he's one of the good guys in the sport. I was happy for that.
I remember seeing him in the bowels of the arena, the exact same arena, Desert Diamond Arena, last summer when he lost to Navarrete, how emotional he was. As he walked past me with his manager, Frank Espinoza, I said to myself, oh boy.
That was a tougher loss,
yeah.
I feel, than even Shakur.
Right, because it was also emotional.
Of course.
I just said, I don't know if he could bounce back. And I'm here ringside watching this. First two rounds, Liam Wilson, tall, lean guy, a little bit of a left hook. Mm-hmm. I thought it was 2-0 Liam, and I'm thinking, uh-oh. And I don't know what it was, but Liam Wilson got sucked into an inside pocket trench fight. Mm. And over time, Valdez just kept chipping away, chipping away.
Fighting into his hands.
And Valdez had the heavier hands. And the fight turned, and I said to myself, Liam, look, I'm not saying he allowed it to happen, but when he replays that fight in his mind, he was much better off being on the outside than he was from in close. And if you're Oscar Valdez's manager, let's play the role of Frank Espinoza, our good friend.
I love that.
Do you go for a unification bout against Oshaki Foster, who has one of the other major belts, or, because I know that he was in attendance, I got to meet him for the first time, how about a guy moving up from 26th? Venado Lopez.
Ooh. I would go Venado.
Me too.
He's the best. Yeah. Oshaki might be a little too slick. You don't want to go Shakur 2.0 again. So I would go Venado, who's still a dangerous opponent, but who knows if he's going to be able to bring that power. And I think and he's still sort of unorthodox, but I think Valdez can kind of figure him out and time him too.
Yeah. Out of those two, like, look, both are enticing. One is a unification bout, and Valdez is one of these guys, he cares about the Hall of Fame. He really does. He wants to be there one day, and he needs that signature victory or a more of an achievement. And you unify titles, that's a hell of an achievement. But Venado is all Mexican war.
Yeah.
I mean, that is style than Navarrete for one reason. Navarrete has those long arms. Venado's a little bit different, and he's probably a little easier to get inside distance and grind up.
More compact. That plays well into his hands.
And Mario, I was surprised by the booing over this decision. I thought Estrada And again, I'll be biased. She's a friend of the show. But I thought she clearly won this fight outboxing Yocasta Valle.
Yeah, you know, I thought it was competitive and I thought it was close. But I thought she had done enough, too. I was surprised, too, by that reaction. But yeah, Senecia's done a nice little job putting together these wins. And her little career is looking good.
Yeah, she'll be joining us in studio soon. And you can grill her about her personal life and her plans for the summer, which are both professional and personal.
Of course I will.
Of course you will.
That's people want to know that,
you know what?
Kim.
That's what we do. Inquiring minds want to know. And Mario, also on this weekend, on Saturday from the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, PBC on Prime kicked off with a really good show, top to bottom, some good stuff. The main event, WBC and WBO junior middleweight titles are on the line. And you know what we ordered? An upset special, one of your personal favorites, Sebastian Fundura with a 12-round decision over Tim Tszyu.
Wow.
Mario, it was bloody.
Major.
Wow.
That's a major upset because a lot of people were thinking Tszyu, us included.
Oh, yeah, I did.
With Terrence Crawford. And we thought Tszyu was going to be too much for Fundura. He's just a nice kid. I like him because he's a nice kid and his sister. They're like almost kind of nerds. And yeah. I say that with respect. And yet he doesn't fight to utilize his assets.
He fights like he's 5'4".
Exactly. He
not
fights like he's
5'5".
Not 6'5". Exactly. And I'm like, that's so wild. And I love it. And I love it. But man, that got bloody quick. It was just like a butcher's massacre up in there. And he, look, has paid his dues, was stopped not too long ago. The fact that he was able to dust himself off, come up with this huge upset, I was really proud for him. I think Tszyu can also come back. I think once the blood started flowing, it was it affected him. But I do think it does throw a monkey wrench in the Tszyu Terrence Crawford plans for right now.
Well, absolutely. Well, Mario, let's go. First 6 minutes, I thought Tim Tszyu had tactical control. He was working well at the mid-range, landing that booming right hand, and then the cut happened. I have a question. If you were in Tim Tszyu's corner, or if you were handling that career, would you have told that referee, hey, we can't see?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, especially what was on the line with a possible matchup with Crawford. Yes. Yes, I would have done that. It's not shady, it's just being smart, I think, at the end of the day.
Discretion is the better part of valor. And Mario, by round 4 and 5, remember that movie with Sissy Spacek? It got bloodier than the end of Carrie at the homecoming.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt about it, the vision was absolutely impacted. And I just kept thinking, But I have a question, though. Do you think the way he carried on and fought valiantly helps him from a marketing standpoint, that we can, that as the public can say, that's a real fighter right there in Tim Tszyu?
Well, absolutely. And I think he felt that he needed to fight that way because he needed a stoppage at that point because it was starting to slip away. Afterwards, both fighters seemed like they were both, not only respectful of each other, but wanting a rematch. And I wouldn't have a problem if that happened right away.
Right. And look, after the fight, Errol Spence came into the ring. And I'm just like, here's the problem with Errol. He hasn't fought since July 29th when he got thrashed by Terrence Crawford. Mm. And now you have Terrence Crawford, who's the WBO mandatory, being a super champion. I don't think that fight's going to happen. Crawford, right now, from what I was told, the latest I've heard is he's moving in the direction of Israel Madrimov, and I'm like, ooh, that's a solid fight. So if you do that, that's okay. And look, I'm with you. In a perfect world, Fundura Tszyu happens in October, November. I think they should run that back. And Mario, a fight that I thought, boy, this satisfied me because I've never really been a fan. The WBA Junior Welterweight Championship of the World is now in the hands of Pitbull, Esau Cruz,
wow,
who absolutely mauled, as Oscar De La Hoya would say, Rolis Romero.
I know, he calls him Rolis.
That's like his thing.
It's the funniest thing.
Rolis.
It's the funniest thing. Wow, Rolis had a different attitude post-fight, huh?
Yeah, he's not going to be an Amazon superstar.
No,
yeah.
All of a sudden, yeah, he found God real quick. No, Isaac Pitbull came out. That night they unleashed him.
Just beat him up.
Beat him up from the beginning. And look, Rolis or Romero.
I got you doing it now.
Exactly. He's a heavy-handed guy. He's a dangerous guy. But Isaac Cruz makes you fight his fight. And he was on that night. Just suffocating him, putting that pressure, letting the leather fly. Big overhands right. Had him buzzed a couple times. Finally had him out of there. It was so satisfying to watch this because of Romero's attitude. Now, I'm watching that fight, I'm thinking, I cannot believe Romero thought it was a better idea to face Isaac Cruz than it was Ryan Garcia. Where I have to assume he was getting paid much more handsomely.
Nope. I talked to somebody directly involved in the negotiations.
He wasn't getting paid more for the Ryan Garcia fight?
He took 2.5 times less. Whoever told him that should be fired for legal malpractice.
No, that's what I'm saying. He would have gotten paid that much more for the Ryan Garcia fight.
See.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, you said, yeah, he took 2.5 times left to fight Isaac Cruz. That's what I don't understand. A much more dangerous opponent, and you're taking much less money. I don't understand the logic behind that.
Yeah, that is platform protection from those involved in handling the career. Where the fighter,
how'd that work out?
Not well. Not well. And Isaac Cruz, from what I was told by people that are in that venue, I'm not saying he's a star, but he's kind of a thing. There were a lot of Mexicans. He stole the show. And you're trying to get me drunk here, which, by the way, I'm not going to object to.
Taking advantage. I was drinking at work.
But Esau Cruz is like a human fire hydrant with two fists. The way he's built is very difficult. You have to really bend your knees to get in the punching range.
You ain't getting any body shots.
Yeah, and he's heavy-handed. Look, I always thought Gervonta Davis had an issue with him because one of the few times Gervonta was the taller guy. I just don't think he was used to it.
Right.
Now, I don't know what's going to happen if he's going to stay at 140 or go back down to 135, but Esau Cruz is now a thing. He's now become a Mexican attraction. And look, I don't want to be disrespectful, but I've always thought Rolly Romero was really a hot pile of garbage, technically. I don't think he ever learned how to fight. I don't think he's all that good. He had an obnoxious attitude. And the word that comes to my mind is comeuppance. I'll just leave it at that.
That's
also,
exactly right.
Sergey Boichuk ground up Ryan Mendoza, and now he might be in line soon for a title shot at 154. Big victory for Mr. Tom Loeffler and 360 Promotions.
Nice.
Mario, I was actually at this card the next day after getting back from Arizona. Saturday night, March 30th, YouTube Theater. Golden Boy had a show on The Zone. Can I give Gilberto Zurdo Ramirez some credit?
Yes.
He looked damn good at cruiserweight against Arsan Gulamarian. In and out movement, working inside the pocket, beating him to the punch. Cruiserweights need names. I'm not saying he's the best cruiserweight. That's still Jai Opataya. But you know what? Zurdo looked damn good.
Yes, he did. And I was really happy for him because he's a great guy. Trained at his gym, Brickhouse Boxing, right here. He's always very nice and humble guy and cool with everybody there. I actually think cruiserweight's going to work out well for him. I was concerned if he was going to be able to take that punch and how his punches would affect his opponents. But for being a big guy, I don't know how he ever made super middleweight.
Yeah,
at one point. That's beyond
me. 32 pounds.
I do not understand that it happened. But he's always been, because he's messed around with me. We've sparred in there. He's very athletic and mobile and agile for a big guy. And obviously, he's left-handed. Cruiserweights, most of them are not like that. They're big guys. They're kind of plodding. They're borderline heavyweights, right? So they're going to stand for essentially kind of right in front of you. I think his athleticism
works.
And his craftiness works to his advantage. I think he's going to have some success there. He's not obviously killing himself to make the weight. So I think that was the start of something really good for him. So I was happy for him and for Julian Chua, who needed a win.
Right, and look, I told someone at Golden Boy, get him two more defenses this year. Don't just settle for one, because discipline has been an issue. But that was an impressive performance all the way around, because Gulamarian's a career cruiserweight, heavy-handed. You know what? Zurdo's chin, his whiskers held up to some solid, heavy punches.
Yeah, that was impressive.
Yes, absolutely. Also, April 6th from Las Vegas on The Zone, brought to you by Matchroom Sports. Mario, I'm just going to say it. People are going to try to soft shoe it. I thought that Richardson Hitchens got an absolute gift against Gustavo Lemos. I thought Lemos banged him out. I thought he won 7 to 8 rounds. And I don't like the fact that Richardson Hitchens says, well, because of this IBF rule, I can only put on 10 rounds, 10 pounds. Bro, if you're complaining about that, I have some advice. Move up and wait. I thought Gustavo Lemos controlled that fight. I thought he was up 3-0. He won 4 of the last 5 rounds. Bad decision. And what was really shown on April 6th is that Richardson Hitchens has some ability. He's a really good boxer. Technically sound. However, He is not ready for the elite at junior welterweight. I'll just leave it at that. And this past weekend, Saturday night, American Bank Center, Corpus Christi, Texas, on ESPN, a show promoted by Top Rank. Mario, you know when a fight is bad from Top Rank? You know when a fight is really bad and boring and uneventful?
They don't put up any highlights.
Yeah.
Can I tell you something?
Wow.
Can I tell you something?
Jared Anderson against Ryan Merhi. Not his fault, but ooh, not a good look.
I want to punch you in the face right now.
Why?
I've been wanting to tell you that.
Why?
Because
that's perpetual.
Well, that's true, but more than ever.
Well,
right,
what's
now
changed?
Without gloves.
Oh, jeez.
Wow. Bare knuckle style.
What?
More on that. Well, by the way, bare knuckles coming.
Your BFKC thing.
That's next week. We'll talk about more of that on that later. Because after what was an epic, incredible, historic night of us watching UFC 300 for 4 hours where all fights delivered.
Good card.
You said, hey, make sure to watch this ESPN fight, Mario. Make sure to watch this thing. And I said, okay, I'm going to check it out. Afterwards, I'm in my bed. It sure helped me go to sleep.
Well, I should be thanked.
No, I didn't need any help. So I'm there, and I'm like kind of half, because we were drinking. I'm half buzzed, and I'm like, am I in a coma? What is going on? I'm like, I'm going to kick Kim's ass when I see him. That was awful. Especially, it made it awful on the heels of what we just saw. And I'm surprised, because Top Rank usually does a pretty good job of matchmaking. So I'm so surprised about that. That was one of those fights where you let him in free, but then you charge him to leave. That was bad, bro. And it was such a contrast.
I think the word
from the UFC.
The fancy word is juxtaposition.
It was a juxtaposition. Yeah. The with boxing and MMA, that was a stark, unfortunate contrast for the sport.
Well, it turns out, look, Efe Ajogbe and Guido Vianello put on a hell of a fight. That's a really good 10-round heavyweight fight. It turns out one of those guys should have been in the ring with Big Baby Anderson. But I have a question with Jared. He's 24 years old. I think he's still the best pure American heavyweight we've had since Riddick Bowe. I'm talking about a guy that's just a boxer, right? He keeps talking about, well, age 27, he wants to retire.
How can a guy be that focused and put in work when he's got one foot out the door?
You can't.
How
can the public invest in him?
Well, then there's
they
that.
Won't. They then won't.
Well, they invest because of the statement you just said. Best American heavyweight since Riddick Bowe. So then people get intrigued. They want to give him a chance. But with performances like that, and when you're, even if you think it, if you're saying it in interviews, I want to retire.
It's a turn off.
Your heart's not really in it. You got one foot out the door, like I said. And like, why am I going to waste my time with this guy? And guess what? I'm not going to waste my time with this guy or listen to you.
Oh.
I want to have the fights like that.
Well, here's the thing. Look, the game has moved on from Jack Dempsey, Joe Louis, Muhammad Ali, Mike Tyson. It'll move on from Jared Anderson, whether he wins a heavyweight title or not.
Right.
I mean, look, nobody wants to be depressed when you hear an interview with the fighter. I want to be excited. Right. That's a soldier. Wow, that's a guy that no one listens to my buddy Sean Zatel does his own YouTube network. Good luck with that. Just started. Did a really good interview. And he was very sympathetic towards his plight because Sean, unlike me, is a very nice guy. But I came away thinking, okay, who in the world would listen to Jared Anderson and say, hey, buddies, we're going to go watch Jared Anderson. You know why? Because he's got 4 fights left at age 24. That's the worst selling point I've ever heard.
No.
But I will give Ajogbe and Vianello credit. What a fight. They swapped leather. I thought it could have gone either way. And for Guido Vianello, even though he lost, I thought in many ways he saved his career.
Great name. Guido Vianello is an awesome name.
It just sounds like I want
Linguini. Damn, I
want
to just watch him next time.
Yeah, and I just want Linguini now. That's a
Guido Vianello.
Oh, and by the way, Abdullah Mason, what a prospect.
Okay, now on the flip side. On the flip side from the Baby Miller. Now that kid looks like he's really getting in his man strength to go along with that blazing speed of his. Those sharp uppercuts and quick left hooks and those counter punches. I know he's only 20 years old,
right,
and you want to be careful how you move him. But he's definitely headed in the right direction. Blue chip prospect. I think big things lie ahead if he continues down this path.
He's Apple stock in 1997. And getting to know him and his father, he's got a very good head on his shoulders.
Oh, he's great.
I don't think there's any of that wackiness. And I just look at his skills. And in this fight, the thing I liked is he was staying back on his back foot. He wasn't just charging in. Because sometimes He's like that sports car without brakes. They run into things.
No, he seemed very composed.
Yeah, and he's got a lot of talent.
Yeah,
a lot.
About what, in the fourth, was it?
Fourth round.
Yeah, fourth
round. But it was composed. There was nothing desperate about what
those
he did.
Those punches he was rolling, coming back with those big uppercuts, those nice little hooks, it was really nice.
Moving on to news and notes, and I want to get this right out of the way before I forget. I was stunned and saddened by the word of the passing of Gary Shaw at age 79.
I knew Gary as well. Damn.
I knew Gary very well.
What a boxing character, man.
I mean,
great
he's one of a kind. Look, he was fun. He was gregarious. He could be volatile. I mean, look, he cussed me out many times. There were years we didn't talk. But he took me to the Silver Dome, which I roasted him for, which he hated. It was a love-hate relationship at times. But, yeah. Like, overall...
Gary and his son Jared Shaw.
Oh, Jared! Scala!
Scala, if he's a rapper.
Yeah, Scala was great!
That's funny. He's got a tattooed on the back of him.
They're great people. And by the way, Gary, University of Miami, loved his Miami Hurricane football team.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, he... By the way... They were instrumental in Kimbo Slice being a thing.
Really?
Yes. Jared actually was very instrumental in making...
Jared was,
yeah. He brought him in. And Sunicia Estrada had a great tweet that before I even turned pro, this guy helped sponsor me.
Yeah.
Putting me on the pro debut and paid
awesome.
For everything. And look, Gary's one of these guys that loved the game. He loved the action. And did he have an ego? Yeah. Guess what? We all do. But all I know is this. When he was in charge of GSP and he was one of the house promoters for Showtime Boxing, they had an unbelievable run.
They did. He had a good run.
I mean, I think his shining achievement, he was a part of Castillo Corrales.
It's true.
I mean, he was a part of Winky Wright.
I remember Chad Dawson, too.
Chad Dawson was one of those. Jeff Lacy was one of his guys.
Yeah, Jeff Lacy.
Winky Wright, he had a very close relationship.
That's
with
right.
Shane Mosley was one of his guys.
Yeah.
And what I liked about...
Good New Yorker, like really New York.
Yeah, from Jersey.
He
was an inspector for years who just loved boxing.
Yeah,
had a run with Main Events, and then they had a falling out. Went to his own company.
Yeah.
And he did great things. The thing I liked about Gary was when you would call him... He would rarely go off the record. He would just like, this is what I'm going to say, Steve. I don't care. And he would get into battles with people. He had rivalries.
I love that.
But he
79,
was
huh?
79.
He made it longer than OJ.
Yeah, he did. And we'll talk about that later. But he's a guy that loved boxing. And me and Gary had a great relationship. We had some ups and downs.
I
can honestly say he made boxing fun to cover. And only in boxing can you meet guys. You know what he did before boxing? Ran a candy shop. That's what he did. He did. And so
boxing, you get people that come from all walks of life. Frito-Lay, which you don't like to let. Erica Gomez.
Yeah, that's my guy.
The candy shop.
Yeah.
Bob Arum was a U.S. attorney.
Yeah.
I mean, all these different things. I can't believe you said Scala.
Scala.
People that know are laughing right now because Scala.
But anyway, rest in peace to Gary Shaw and our condolences to all his loved ones and his family.
Yeah, Scala. He's a great guy.
Mario, this is interesting. While Derek James is preparing, we hope, for the fight Saturday, the trainer of Ryan Garcia came out during your hiatus in Chicago. Him and Errol Spence split.
Mm.
Wow, there are no happy endings in this game, is there?
Well, the only reason I'm not surprised is because whenever you lose a big fight, you get other people in your ear saying, man, you need a new atmosphere.
In other words, there's a scapegoat.
There's always a scapegoat. You need a new atmosphere. That just got stale. You need a new trainer. You need a new outlook. You still got a champ, this and that. And unfortunately, the trainers...
But you know what always comes down to, though?
First to go.
Money. Because Derek James said, well, wait a minute. You only gave me 10% or my percentage of what's on the contract. You didn't give me any of that pay-per-view upside. Now, to be fair to everybody, I don't know what the agreement is. Because there are certain trainers like Freddie Roach made millions of dollars. He didn't get Manny's upside pay-per-view. He got a flat fee, which was, I believe, seven figures. He was making a good living.
Good living. And I remember when he fought Mayweather. Remember when Manny stopped and took a selfie?
Yeah. Oh, they got for that company, Reese's Pieces or something?
No, not Reese's Pieces. It was like a Motorola or somebody to take a picture.
Okay.
Manny got like a million and Freddie took it. Freddie got like... $250 just for taking the selfie. He goes,
really?
I made a quarter of a million. Just taking a quick selfie. Just going in. Yeah, I'll never forget that. Going in was like, $250 or $350, something like that. That was Freddie. Just taking a selfie.
And
not to mention
the ancillary benefits of being associated with the marquee fighter.
So, yeah, no, Freddie's done quite well.
But I have a question. If you're Derek James and you've been there from the beginning at 0-0, because it's different when you take over an established fighter, I wonder, are you... are you, was it within your rights to get every piece of a percentage of whatever's earned?
It's all, it all depends on what's agreed upon. You can't just be assuming stuff at the end. You have to have that spelled out specifically from the beginning. I would have never, if I'm a fighter, I would have never, or the manager of the fighter, I would have never have agreed to any sort of upside ancillary benefits from the sponsors or whatever. Look, this is what I'm getting paid salary-wise. Let's say it's $1 million for conversation purposes. Then you're going to get 10% of that. Okay. But if I, because of pay-per-view and because of the sponsorship, if I end up making $5 million, that doesn't matter. You're still getting what? No, it doesn't matter. You're getting what I'm getting paid
right.
as a fighter, because you're training me as a fighter. You're not my promotional coach. You're not my media guru
right.
who's helped. Do you understand? Does that make sense?
Well, no, I would say to it's trainers, just, make sure you have a contingency plan to handle all of this, because
well, listen, if you now listen, if it's negotiated, like if you get right. all that, but I'm just saying as a fighter, right. and by the way, I think that's fair.
Right.
You're training me to get in the ring. What I do outside of the ring with all the ancillary benefits, that's me and my personality. You have nothing
right.
to do with
but
that.
But you know
it's
what?
The ring.
You know what one trainer told me though, Steve, here's the problem.
But
with
hold
that.
On, I'm sorry. Yeah. But here's the thing. But like when Oscar started making a lot of money and Canelo started, when you're making like 50, 60, 70 million a fight, they don't do the 10% anymore.
They don't. It's
then
a cap.
Then it's a cap.
Cap.
Then it's a cap. That's chicken shit. That I don't agree with. If you're going to, if you took me this far to get to the point
well,
to make 50,
if,
60
no,
million.
If you start 0-0, I'm with you.
Yes.
If but
you start
if
zero,
I'm taking
zero.
Over in your 50th fight,
no,
we're
no,
going to
no,
negotiate
no, no, no.
a deal. That's
you're,
different.
Yes,
that
you're,
is different.
You're exactly right. But if I'm Reynoso,
right.
who started with Canelo 0-0, right. I'm assuming because Canelo's been so loyal to him
yeah.
that Canelo's making these $50 million fights that he's making, really, he's making still his 10%. I can't imagine that he would tell him, we're going to have a negotiation now, or a cap. I don't believe, as a fighter, me, if I was a fighter, I think it would bring me bad karma. If all of a sudden you brought me to $50 million, but then we're going to start to negotiate, no, I'm going to keep it going.
Yeah, well.
You understand? Now, granted. Also, if I'm going to make, if Pepsi wants to pay me another extra
well, that's,
$5 million.
That's sponsorship, though.
Or whatever. If I'm, you know, whatever the case may be, then that has nothing to do with you.
Mario, Steven Breadman Edwards, one of the bright boxing minds, that says, Steve, here's the problem with where trainers get screwed.
Breadman.
They
Breadman.
Are now putting fake numbers on the bout sheet, and they expect us trainers to work off the lower numbers instead of the real numbers. So that's one. But this reminds me of a story, and I've told you this before. Marvin Hagler.
It's bad karma. I'll come
is.
Back to you.
Marvin Hagler is the one guy. The Petronellis, for this last fight or two, tried to say, hey, Marvin, this is, if it's about the money, we're going to lower our percentage. And Bob Arum told me the story. Marvin looked over at them and slammed his fist on the table and said, God, if you guys think it's about the money, you, it's not about the money. And when I fight, and I think it was Ray Leonard, when I fight this, you're going to get your 33%, and I don't want to hear anything about
33?
It. Yeah, because they were managers.
Oh, that's
managers
different.
And trainers.
Okay, got it,
yeah,
got it. Managers. Oh, then they came up.
Yeah, so Marvin Hagler basically had this code that if you're with me from the beginning, well, your deal is your deal. You're not taking anything less.
See, and that's a man of integrity. That's a class act right there. That's how I
yeah.
Why would you want to bring any sort of bad karma?
Right.
On? I wouldn't. If you have any sort of character, I wouldn't.
And you're actually penalizing the trainer for doing his job
yeah, how
well.
Yeah, how much incentive is he going to have?
Hey, you know what?
How much is that? Oh, you're demo. Okay. You're
you know what? You're doing such a great job. As I make more money, you get less.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
it doesn't make any sense.
I mean, it doesn't work
no,
that.
I want this trainer to be more motivated than ever.
Right. Mario, big news last week, though. Matchroom Sports and our old friend Eddie Hearn's got a new pair of boots. Jerron Ennis...
We haven't talked about that. What is
I mean,
take on
I,
that?
I
right now I saw
I
that.
Love that because he needs activity. I don't know who he's going to get. I heard he's going to have a homecoming fight in Philadelphia during the summer, and I think the goal is to get him 2-3 fights every year from here on out. Good luck to everybody involved. But think about this with Jerron Ennis. We had him on our show back in July.
Nice kid.
And what did he tell us? Oh no, I'm going to have one more fight this year. Never had a fight. He hasn't fought since. He's got to get going.
I know, absolutely.
So that's it for that news and notes. We go to the Ask Mario segment of this fine program. Oh, right off the bat from our guy Jovovich. You guys have to discuss Orenthal's life, OJ. Did Mario ever cross paths with him on the Hollywood/LA scene?
Don't say slash.
Ooh,
too
you're
soon.
Right.
Too soon,
sorry.
Too soon.
My apologies.
All the time. Nicest guy in the world.
Hello there.
You're
gonna get in trouble for
you
that.
You know, well, no. You know when they interview like the neighbors of serial killers or Ted Bundy? He was the nicest guy.
Yeah.
OJ really was. He was the most charismatic, nicest guy. And it's funny because we're we're old, but we're still too young to have ever really seen OJ play. So all we know him from...
Never saw a single game with him,
no, exactly. All we know him from is his time as a broadcaster.
And Hertz.
And Hertz commercials and like Naked Gun movies.
Right.
Right? So that's how we know him. And he was lovable and very likable guy and charming, right? Prior to 1994... That's how you knew and loved OJ. After 1994, it's a different story. So we're at the age where I think it's interesting. If you're a little older, then maybe you have a little bit more equity in seeing him play. And if you're in Buffalo, this and that, especially because he went to USC, Heisman winner. But after that, then he became so polarizing. And it's funny, I'll never forget the car chase, more so the verdict are moments in our generation
we'll never forget.
Where were you moments? Mm-hmm. There were like our parents, where were you when JFK got shot? They were our moments. Yeah. Like, what do we have? We have the Twin Towers when they got hit in 2001. Yeah. Where were you there?
Yeah.
Where were you when OJ verdict went down? And those are our sort of moments. I can tell you where I was for both. For in 94, because I remember they were playing, there was a Houston Rockets.
Game five against New York Knicks.
Exactly. They're playing the Knicks. I was in Vegas shooting the Saved by the Bell Wedding in Las Vegas movie.
Wow.
Yes, and we stopped. I remember, we didn't stop. We happened to be down. They were setting up a shot. Hotel, I'm like, what the hell's going on with this car chase? And I remember I watched, I'll never forget, that was Vegas, okay? The verdict, I was in Kenosha, Washington, working on Fever Lake. Frazier gets you. Shut up, Frazier. I was working on that, and I'll never forget it. And I remember everybody stopped the scene and we were watching.
What did Corey Haim say?
So stupid. That's right. Corey Haim. Dude, I remember all the white people were very upset.
Yeah. They still are.
They were very, very upset. Isn't that weird? Those two things I remember, both those things I was working on when they happened. Where were you?
During the chase, I was working at a sports card memorabilia shop, the sports gallery. I still remember exactly where I was. I'm still a huge Hakeem Olajuwon fan, so I was into that Rocket series.
I love Hakeem.
And
what are the best centers ever?
Top five, Mount Rushmore. So as they went to the little
box.
That'd
be top four, but go on.
Oh, yeah. Okay, power five. Yeah, well, he's not my number two. So as they went to the little box with that white Bronco, and I don't mean John Elway going, I thought, okay, whatever. Let's just get actually. Then all of a sudden, that split screen became not so split. It pissed me off. I was angry. I was like, okay, guys, I didn't really realize that no one really cared about this NBA Finals. And Rockets lost to go down 3-2. I was quite angry about that. As for the verdict, which happened in 1995, I believe, I was working in Burbank at an Aramark loading magazines that were not sold at 7-Elevens and other stores. You had to load up the boxes.
Damn.
That's what I was doing. Yeah. But I do remember during that stretch at the end, for months at a time during lunch break, everybody would be watching in the break room. The trial. Honestly, I didn't really care about the trial.
That's what started cable news.
That in the Gulf War of 91.
More so OJ. Right. Because that was the first time they allowed cameras in the room and we saw the case the beginning to end. People were captivated. And it was someone who people were familiar with and grew up with, whether it was my generation's or our parents' generation. Right? And there wasn't a gluttony of cable networks back then. There was really just a few in the 90s. And the funny thing is, one last thing before we move on from that, Robert Shapiro, who actually a good friend of mine.
We both know him from Wild Card. Huge goes there often.
Yeah, and I've hosted a charity event. He's been over the house. I've gone over his. Really great guy. Obviously, I've never asked him about it, but he told me.
Awkward.
But I'll never forget what he told me. He goes, Mario, there's a difference whether someone is guilty and whether you can prove they're guilty. And the team that he assembled, because he assembled it, he said they knew they were going to have a majority black jury. He got Johnny Cochran. Yeah. He's the one that got F.
Carl Douglas.
Yes. Robert Kardashian was just there. He said just because he was a homie. He didn't do anything. He was just his buddy right there. But he was the mastermind behind Shapiro. He assembled his dream team. And that was like almost not fair against the local prosecutors here in
Darden
LA.
And Marsha Clark.
Marsha Clark used to live down the street from me.
What?
She used to live down the street from me. And I remember her house used to, coincidentally, during that time when we were in Burbank. She used to live in Burbank when I lived up on the hill. She's down, and a bunch of cars and stuff are always in front of her house and stuff. But I'll never forget that. And there's a, and when he said there's a big difference, in other words, saying like, hey,
yeah, uh-huh,
he could have done it, but it doesn't mean they can prove it. It doesn't mean you have to prove it. So I was like, wow, that's crazy. So that's wild.
Didn't Shapiro also figure out the glove thing?
He was pretty much behind everything.
I remember him telling us he figured out that.
Yeah. By the way, Robert Shapiro is a real big boxing
fan.
I mean, he
is. I've sparred with him.
Yeah.
What? Yeah, really? He gets in there, moves around. He still goes and trains to this day.
And he goes to club fights. He goes to club fights out here locally.
He's one of the last living members of that Dream Team. Yeah, him and Dershowitz.
And Carl Douglas.
And Carl Douglas.
Here's one from the Spirit of Competition, the only Sanch. Two-part question. Asked to Chula Vista heartthrob. A couple of Japanese-based questions. Does he believe Ohtani gambled? And number two, does Inoue need to come to America to prove himself?
I don't believe Ohtani gambled, and I'm going to tell you why.
Well, you are such a Dodger fan.
No, but I'm going to tell you why.
You are such a Dodger fan.
That's a good question. I'm going to tell you why. When you make the ridiculous amount of money that Ohtani makes, has been making, dude makes $40 million a year off of sponsorships, not even his salary, where he's making almost $1 billion for this. It's ridiculous. Highest paid athlete ever. And he's been doing it for a while. And in Japan, you don't know where your money is. You have to trust your accountant. You have to trust the people that handle it.
And your translator.
Well, that's just it. I think here's the things that happened. These are the only possibilities that happened, okay? This is all that happened. Either A, his translator was gambling. He told Ohtani about it. They're real tight. Ohtani gave him the money and covered it, okay? Or B, the translator gambled and stole the money and used it without Ohtani knowing. Okay? Or C, Ohtani was gambling, got pinched, and the translator is taking the fall. Those are the only three scenarios.
Yeah.
Those are the only three. I think it's two. I think he took advantage. The translator thought, this guy's not going to miss it. Little by little, it started adding up. He's not going to miss it. Look, he went under a federal prosecution. Dude, you can't lie under that. I don't think he's willing to risk. He just signed a $1 billion car. I don't think you're willing to risk all that for what? And why is he going to be gambling when you got that much money? How the hell? What's you winning 10-20,000 here?
It's the action.
I know, but I don't. I don't think. I honestly. Do you think so? I honestly don't think he would.
I'm not sure, but I
honestly don't think that. You know, look, it. We have to take him at his word for it.
Yeah.
He didn't, and they did the federal investigation. So far, they found nothing. So I'm leaning towards what he says. I don't think he needs it to get that high. And I think it's just, when you have that much money, it's kind of boring. You don't, you know, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, I would just say to any athlete, just stay away from gambling or any of your associates. Nothing good can come of it. Here's one from David. Mario, April 20th through June 1st is nuts. A great six-week run for boxing.
Is.
Haney, Ryan, Fury, Usyk, Canelo, Munguia, Inoue, Neri, Beterbiev, Bivol, Wilder, Zhang, Loma, Kambosos, Hergovic, Dubois, Taylor, Catterall, too. What's your favorite? Which one gets your juices going the most?
You know what that means? All those fights?
What's that?
A lot of fried chicken.
Oh, my God.
A lot of fried chicken.
Oh, that was so good Saturday.
We got down a lot. We must have ate two chickens.
And
like
with
full
chicken. And with your hot sauce.
With my hot sauce, my hot ass sauce right there. Hey, Kim really is Mexican. No. This fool threw a lot of hot. I was like, damn.
Well, speaking of Bivol,
you had Chorro.
I really did, though. The pipes got cleaned out. I'm not going to lie to you. Mario, June 1st with Beterbiev, Bivol. I think me and you have said that's number one. What a card, though. That top to bottom, the 5 versus 5 of Eddie Hearn and Frank Warren. I mean, Deontay Wilder against Zhele Zhang.
I love that.
Hamza Shiraz against Ammo Williams.
That's UFC-esque.
It is, and we'll talk about that a little bit later, but I would say Beterbiev.
What time is it going off again? Probably 2 in the afternoon?
Yeah, it's going to be one of those early cards.
That's all right.
That's okay. Day drinking. We have never been opposed to it. It's interesting. ESPN Plus.
I prefer it.
Yeah. ESPN Plus will be showing the main event as free. The rest of the card will actually be pay-per-view on other outlets, so you can all make your decisions. Moving on to final flurries, and speaking of which, UFC 300. What a card. Top to bottom.
We sat there for 4 hours. Not one boring fight. And you were surprised when you saw the fighters like number one, ranked number three. Champion ranked number one. Like all these, the fights that are supposed to happen. And they were competitive and they were entertaining. And we had last second knockouts. We had devastating knockout.
We had a buzzer beater.
We had a buzzer beater. Dude, man. We had Paheya got kicked in the nuts. He waved off the ref because he had the timing and then proceeded to knock him out with a big left hook. It was outstanding, was it not?
Right, and also, even before the
main call. We saw our boy Rudy Hernandez there?
Yeah, I mean, you would have acknowledged him with the job that he did. You may have actually waved to him. By the way, I saw a pretty good fight on ESPN on the preliminaries. Rakic ain't no joke. He scored a vicious knockout on one of the preliminary fights. But again,
they were all good, too.
They were all good, and top to bottom, though, again, and you're going to have people say, well, they're not all good. Yeah, all I know is this. When I look at the pay-per-view cards of boxing compared to the UFC, and I'm going to write an article about this, UFC does a better job of doing more of the revenge, the rematches level cards than boxing.
Absolutely. It's not even close, Kim. You see the arenas full from the preliminary bouts, not even the main cards, and they always deliver.
I mean,
we didn't get bored one time. That was 4 hours. We just sat there for 4 hours on the couch.
If you look at the pay-per-view undercard this Saturday on Golden Boy and then the Canelo card, and some of those cards, look, at the end of the day, we're going to watch because this is what we do and we enjoy it. But I'm not going to lie to you. The undercard fights for both of those pay-per-view cards, very, very underwhelming, okay? And that's why we've been to boxing matches. Now, as a media member, I have to be there a little earlier. You get to hang out. Mario, we've all seen it, though. If the main event starts at about 8:30, it's not about till what, 7:30-ish, where it starts to fill in, where it's two-thirds, three-fourths.
That's when I'm leaving the bar.
Yeah. And I wish I could be there with you, but I'm not VIP. Anyway, Mario, that night, I lost my phone that night.
Oh, at my house.
Oh, my God.
This guy was freaking out.
I will lose. Who wouldn't be?
No, you lose your phone. It's like you might as well. But here's the thing. Nowadays, when you lose your phone, the info doesn't get lost, right? Because of the cloud and all that, right?
I hope. Because right? I was worried like that? About that. Yeah. The cloud.
Yeah, but Kim doesn't know how to get to the cloud. Yeah. He doesn't know where it is. He doesn't know how to back up his phone.
You better do all that, dude. You better do that. Should have put a scare in you.
Mario, you know what's
interesting? He was so panicked when he walked in here an hour ago.
Dude, he was panicked. He was blowing me up on social media.
No.
Because he didn't know how to go to get it. I kept blowing me up. Like, damn, Kim,
First of all.
I'm like, you didn't lose it in the house. You came in and you sat on this couch. So I go, it's not in the house.
And your house is clean. So there's no.
No, and then we had nobody was there. And I was like, it's not on the couch. Well, I'm gonna tell you right now, it's in your car or it's around your car. It's in your car. There's not at the house. And you kept searching the couch.
What happened was it was raining, and so I had the umbrella. I had my bag, and somewhere along the way, the phone dropped right near where the car is. But it was raining
because I never saw you pull it out
right
at the house.
And I had it, and I woke up three times that night when I got home because I was like, oh my God, what am I gonna do? So here's how much of a hold that this thing has on our lives. When I DM'd you on Twitter, it's the only way I could reach you, and it's on my laptop. So as I'm working out, I learned this. There's no music. I don't have my phone with the YouTube music. I don't even know what time it is.
You felt naked, huh?
Right. Oh, dead. Then I can't even do timed intervals because there's no stopwatch. I don't have one of those old stopwatches. And then as you return my DM, here's the problem. I said, I wonder if Mario's answered me. And I look around. I go, oh, my laptop's upstairs. So then I had to finish my workout, and I said, Mario, I'm going to come down in 45 minutes. So it's raining, and I'm coming down, and the whole time I'm thinking, I'm going to find this phone if it kills me. So as I come up to your street, now, by the way, getting to your house, I felt like Amelia Earhart flying over the Atlantic. I kind of was guessing, like, I think I'm going to the right direction. Luckily for me,
because you didn't have the directions on your phone.
That's right. So I kind of felt like one of those old pilots going, okay. But luckily for me,
bust out the Thomas guy.
Right. So where you get off on the last, I actually know the number. Yeah. I actually remembered the number, which I will not say here. And then everything else, I could kind of eye it. So as I'm driving up your street, I know where I park. So I made sure to park a little bit ahead of it because I thought it's got to be here. So as I come out,
you didn't run over it.
Yeah. Well, I thought we're going to see this thing be like smashed in 50 pieces. Now, you must have the nicest neighbors. Okay. Because as I'm walking towards that area, you ever seen the cartoons when a treasure chest or a gold bar appears? They have like the little flashing lights.
Yeah. Yeah.
I walk over there and I'm like, oh God. And I look, and on this like this little brick stanchion, my phone is there. Someone had picked it up and actually put it face down because it was still raining. I felt like I won a lottery.
Was that the best feeling in the world?
So there's two things I have a theory of. Either you have the greatest neighbors.
Yes.
Who are such great people, the finest people in America. Or they looked at this phone and they said, oh, Samsung, what's this? And just put it down. So when I went to go knock on your door, you were working on your rowing machine. And you said, Kim, I'm over here. And I said, I found it. And you were stunned. You're like, where the hell was this
Because it
thing?
Was raining. I thought the water might have rushed it away or something. Right. It did. It was nonstop rain.
And nothing happened to this phone.
Dude, that's great.
And so the funny thing is, like, you can't navigate. You can't listen to music. And so when I worked out, I said, okay, I'm going to, because I do interval sets. I said, I'm going to use one of my watches. All four of my watches, the battery's dead because no one actually keeps track of time anymore. We just use it as an accessory if it matches your belt.
Yeah.
So as I'm working out in complete silence, I'm saying, this is bizarre. My whole day was going to be to go to the shops of Montebello, go to the T-Mobile and get a new phone. I don't remember the last time I was as relieved as I was to have this thing back in my hand.
Aren't you glad my neighborhood's nice?
You live in one of the greatest neighborhoods of all time. These are fine
that was so
people.
Funny.
Amari, you don't like the chrome bumper coming in? What's going on here?
Bro, so glad we're taping this.
I know.
I had convinced you to do Just for Men.
2016.
To paint the wig, and it was looking really good because you still got a lot of your hair, which you should be proud of at your age.
Yeah.
Bro, you're coming in looking like a combo. Because it's like
a border wall right here, right? Isn't it?
It's funky because it's not even gray. It's white.
It is white.
So it is like Gandalf in fucking Lord of the Rings. It's like that, you know what I mean? It's
good. The white.
Yeah, it is. It's looking wild. Are you considering letting it go and go all white?
I might. Because you're saying I can't go back, though? What?
You can't go. You'll look crazy. Once you go white, that's it. You have to stay there. You have to keep painting. I suggest you keep painting. You only have to paint once a month. What's that? Not a big deal.
I have to paint every couple weeks.
Fine. It's 5 minutes every year. 10 minutes a month. If you can't invest 10 minutes a month in your appearance, then that's awful. You have to be able to do that. This is a visual medium. Come on. You have to be able to.
What's inspiring it, though?
I don't know. I'm just kind of like, you know
it's
what?
It's laziness. That's not pure laziness.
No, because I have my guy do it. And I have to.
God, you don't even do it yourself. I do it myself. No. You should have the guy do it. There's a shampoo now. Yeah. I do shampoo. You run around. You fucking do some errands for 5-10 minutes. And then you go take a shower.
Wait, where's your give me that shampoo.
It's a Just for Men one.
Really?
So
send
yes,
me a screen. Send me that. And here's
the thing. Wait, say it. Just for Men shampoo. That's what it is. The color.
Hold
get
on.
Your color.
You're saying I can't have gravitas? That's what it's all about.
Bro.
It's gravitas.
You're going to look dead. You're going to look dead to me.
My knees feel dead sometimes. You know we're getting old.
I'm
come on.
I'm just telling you. I'm
right,
yeah, but don't.
I'm going to give it a little talk.
I can't you do it. Wear suits and you'll look like a Korean mob boss.
Yeah, it's true. By the way, how was Chi-Town?
Let me tell you something. I love the people in Chi-Town. I love the food in Chi-Town.
Best pizza in the world.
I don't know. That's for you, New York.
I'm not
into the cake type. That's a cake style pizza. That's like a lasagna.
Yeah.
That pizza. I like a little more thin crust myself. But everybody was cool. The production was great. It was a new holiday movie. Bro, it is so damn cold there. It's April and it's snowing. I think we got all four seasons when I was there. But it was cold. I was excited. I took my son to Wrigley Field. Wanted him to go see the Dodgers play the Cubs.
Right.
Looked in the weather. It was supposed to be 70 and sunny that day. It was for two innings. Then torrential downpour. Then it was just a 3-hour delay. And we went up and we kicked back.
Did you actually stay the whole game?
No, it was a 3-hour delay.
No, you're not a real fan.
And so, no.
Yeah.
No. I had to be at work. So then I was like, no, this is not, you know, someone's getting bored after a while. This and that. And so then we bounced. But overall, it was a great experience. But we are so blessed to be in Southern California. It may be very expensive, but I'll tell you what. When I was in Chicago, was there like in October? Going back, that's 7 months, bro.
Yeah.
7 months of cold.
Yeah.
That's not cool. We freak out. It gets in the 50s right here. It was in the 20s and snowing. No. I'm not down with that.
Yeah.
I'm not down with that.
We actually have one season. It's called 75 and sunny. And we complain when it rains once in a while. It rained over the weekend, but I look.
Take that all day in America.
Yeah, I would too. We are absolutely blessed.
We are spoiled.
So,
we are spoiled.
All right, when we come back next week, I'm going to either eat a lot of crow or we're going to be burying Ryan Garcia. This is going to be.
And if you don't paint, you'll be looking like a crow.
Damn. All right,
so. Next week, you're going to be looking crazy.
All right, so anyway, on behalf of Mario Lopez, Smokin', Tim Frazier, and Tino on the edits, this has been the Three Knockdown Rule. Brought to you by Hustler Casino.